Muted.
Hello, and welcome to the Zenith Bank 2015 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, and afterwards, there'll be a question-and-answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Peter Amabo. Please begin your meeting.
Good afternoon, and let me welcome you to Zenith Bank PLC 2015 Investors and Analyst Call, where we'll be discussing our financial statements for year ended December 2015. With me on this call this afternoon, I have Ebenezer Onyango, Executive Director. I have Shola Oladipo, Executive Director. I have Felix Egbon, our Head of Risk Management. I have Mike Anyima, our Head of Investor Relations, and also I have our Chief Financial Officer, Stanley Amuchi, who will take us through the financials. So let me welcome you once again, and by way of intro, I just want to say that 2015 was very, very challenging, with a continued decline in the price of crude oil, which affected most aspects of our economy and our financial system. Foreign exchange was in short, is still in short supply, resulting from these low oil prices. And we also have other conditions, the Treasury single account, where the government moved public sector funds to the central bank. These are some of the challenges that the industry faced in 2015. But I'm happy talking to you this afternoon, looking at what we closed with, which I'll say was quite decent when you compare it to what we had projected. I want us to go straight into details, and I want to hand over to Stanley Amuchi, our Chief Financial Officer, to take us through details of the financials. Then we'll go to the Q&A session. Stanley Amuchi, please.
Okay, good afternoon, and welcome to the conference call. We'll start from slide 8. That shows the financial highlights. Now, you will notice that we grew our gross earnings by 7.8% year-on-year to 432.5 billion. Again, this is a demonstration of the bank's continued increase in its market share in the banking sector in Nigeria. Our net interest income also grew 8.8% year-on-year to 224.6 billion. We have our net interest margin coming in at 8.1%, though a little dip year-on-year by 3.6%. We have PBT growing by 4.9% year-on-year to 125.62 billion. PAT also grew 6.3% year-on-year to 105.67 billion. Customer deposits grew 0.8% year-on-year, notwithstanding the difficulty in the banking sector in 2015, especially on the back of withdrawal of public sector funds by the federal government. We also have our total assets coming in strong at 4.01 trillion, 6.7% year-on-year growth. Our shareholders' funds remain strong at 594 billion, which also witnessed a 7.5% year-on-year growth. We also had our loans coming in at 2.03 trillion, a 15.6% year-on-year growth. Other key ratios, we have our loan-to-deposit ratio at 67.2%, which gives us room to deploy our liquidity to create quality risk assets when the opportunity presents itself. We also have our cost-to-income ratio coming out 57.2%. Again, this is also to underline our effort in bringing our cost, which we are committed to doing even going forward. We have our liquidity ratio at 51.4%, well above the statutory limit of 30%. Our capital adequacy was strong at 21%, which is also well above the statutory requirement of 16% for our capital. We also have other ratios like the return on average equity at 18.4%, and then the NPL came in at 2.2%, some increase from what we had before, yet one of the lowest that we have in the banking industry today. If we go to the next slide, that's slide 9. Slide 9 will give the profit and loss, also depicting some very strong growth on the top lines of gross earnings, as I mentioned before, which grew 7.24% year-on-year. We also have the bottom lines also growing very well, with the PBT growing by about 4.9% and the PAT by 6.24%. We'll go to the next slide, slide 10. Slide 10 gives you an indication of an analysis of our NIMs and our cost-to-income ratio. As I mentioned earlier, we have our NIMs declined by 3.6%. This on the back of decline in yields on government securities during the 2015 financial year. We also have our cost income ratio declining by 0.9%. As I said, this is also a demonstration of the bank's resolve to work down costs, and we are committed to bringing it down below 55%. If we go to the next slide, 11, also gives an analysis of interest income and non-interest income. We have our interest income growing in total by 11% from about 313.4 billion to 348.18 billion. Interest income from loans and advances increased by 20%. Also, this is in line with also growth in the asset itself, the loan growth. We also made sure that we got appropriate pricing for our risk assets, and that also contributed to the growth. We also have interest income from interbank placement decreasing by 38%. And this is as a result of a drop in interbank rates at different times during the year, as liquidity moved either up and down within the financial year. On non-interest income, we had major drop in commission on turnover, and that is also expected more so on reduction in COT as phased out this year. But as of 31st of December, it came down from 2% last year to one per mil, from 2 per mil to 1 per mil in 2015. And also, we had to effectively adjust for the April 1st effective date in 2015. So there was some reversal that we did in the last quarter. So you will notice that in your analysis. We'll go to the next slide, which is slide 12. And that gives us an analysis of interest expenses and total operating expenses. We also noticed that interest expense was up by 16% year-on-year. As a result of the increase in funding sources, we will notice that within the year, especially at the withdrawal of the public sector funds, interest rate in the market went up, and we needed to also defend the deposits we had in the system, and had to also, in line with the market, increase interest rates at that point. So that contributed to also increasing the interest expense, including some increase in the volume of the deposits itself. If we go to operating expenses, we notice an increase of 3%. This is also in line or consistent with the rise in inflation and also increase in AMCON charge, which increases with the size of our total balance sheet. We also have our staff costs reducing by 7% as the bank continues to work efficiently to replace from within. Even when people leave the organization, we try to move people within the bank itself, to ensure that we are not bringing in additional cost on that line. We'll go to the next slide, that's slide 13, which shows the balance sheet, still depicting strengthening balance sheet, showing growth and strong liquidity. As I said, our total asset has moved up from 3.75 trillion to 4 trillion, showing a growth of 6.7%. We'll move to the next slide, which is slide 14. This also showing the liability and equity side of the balance sheet. Again, I mentioned our customer deposits, which grew, notwithstanding the difficulty in the market in 2015. We grew by about 0.8%. Also, our shareholders' fund remains strong, and in fact, one of the strongest in the market, at 7.5% growth from year-on-year. The next slide, which is slide 15, will give us an analysis of loan growth, loans and advances, deposit growth, and deposit mix. Again, we witness continuous growth in our loan balances from 2014 to 2015 of about 15%. Also, our loans are also, we also have term loans being the major part of our loans, followed by overdrafts and other advances and on-lending facilities. On deposit, we still maintain a very strong mix of low-demand deposits, which also contributed over 50% of our total deposits. We have savings increasing from about 8.4% in 2014 to 9.6%, and term loans at 21.8%. If we move straight to the next slide, which is slide 16, that shows our liquid assets and funding mix. And again, it shows increase in our liquid assets by 6%. And also on the funding mix, we also have increase in different lines of the funding mix, like customer deposits, as I mentioned earlier, which increased. Other liabilities came down by 31%. And then on-lending facilities that also went up. We go to the next slide, which is slide 17, which has an indication of P&L of the bank and gross earnings by geography, also showing that Nigeria contributes the major part of our revenue at about 91.4%, while the rest of Africa contributed 6.15% and Europe 2.4% in 2015. The next slide also gives our gross revenue by sector, also showing that we still remain very strong in corporate side of the business. We see retail also coming strong, and then institutional business, and then public sector. We go to slide 19. Slide 19 also gives us indication of deposit and loans by sector, and that's depicted like for total deposits. Corporate and commercial banking contributed about 57.67%, retail at 33.15%. Then on gross loans, we also have our loans, we have a majority of our loans to the corporate at about 75% of our loans to the corporate, 12.84% to institutions, and then 12.25% to the public sector. To go to the next slide, which is slide 20, that gives an indication of the trend of NPL, the coverage and the ratios. And we've seen NPL inching up a little bit to 2.18% from what we had in 2014. And that is not all related to the general situation in the market. And we still maintain that this is about the lowest that we have current in the Nigerian banking industry. We'll continue to ensure that our risk management process remains very strong, ensure that we keep working it down as always promised. Again, the slide 21 will also give us an indication of the loans by sector comparing 2014 and 2015. And again, shows strong diversification in our loan portfolio to ensure that we manage our risk properly and with a well-diversified diversified loan portfolio. Again, we have on slide 22 an analysis of our NPL by sector, which also shows how our NPL has trended between 2014 and 2015. Again, seeing some increase in some sectors, which are basically some new loans that came in. Not really so bad, but the bank taking a very prudent step to make sure that we make provisions where necessary. We will continue to develop our risk management strategy and improve on the quality of our loan portfolio. Overall, we believe our NPL ratio of 2.2% is currently one of the lowest in the industry today. On slide 23, gives an indication of the liquidity and capital adequacy of the bank. As I mentioned earlier, our liquidity remains very strong and well above the requirement by the statutory. Capital adequacy is strong at 21%, which is much above the 16% requirement. Also, our capital base, which remains predominantly Tier 1 core capital, remains very strong and consistent with what we've had over the years. At this point, I will hand over to the MDCO to give us the concluding part of the strategy and the focus going forward.
Thank you very much, Stanley, for that detailed presentation. And I'll say we are ready for questions and answers now.
Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to withdraw that question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. And our first question comes from line of Ebenmi Azaro from FBN. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, sir. Bumi Ashali from FBN Quest. I hope you can hear me clearly. I have three or four questions. So the first question is on your loan growth. If you could first of all comment on the strong Q-on-Q growth in Q4 of 8%. Clearly, you gained market share. So which sectors were driving this growth? And if you could also answer the same question for your guidance of 5-10% growth. So which sectors do you expect to drive that? Second one is on your loan-to-deposit ratio, which is now the highest it's ever been, at almost 80%. I see that obviously regulatory changes have influenced this in part, but is this trend of higher LTDs also an indication of some efforts on your part to try and maximize your NIM? Then your OPEX, how much room do you have to reduce it, or is the best we're likely to see this year a flat trend? And then finally, I want to explore refinancing risk or repricing risk in terms of your NIM. So far, there's no noticeable change in the split between your T-bills and your bonds on the balance sheet in terms of the percentage. Now, despite the severe fall in yields for T-bills, I was thinking that maybe we'll see a bit of a shift more towards bonds. I know that loans are still the largest part of your revenue, but if you could just comment on whether there's any plan to change that bond T-bill mix. Those are my four questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think Stanley will take the part on the OPEX. That's your third question. They're talking about loan to deposit ratio. If you check, we don't have 80% anywhere there. So if you check your slide, you'll find out that our loan to deposit ratio is not 80%. So just cross check that. Then on the issue of the loan growth, talking about I think it's actually analyzed it, because what we've done is to do a comparison of 2015 and 2014. We even have graphical illustrations, so that shows actually where you have the growth. Stanley, please take us through the OPEX, then Mike, you will take us through the T-bills and the bonds. Stanley, please.
Okay, yeah, on the OPEX, you asked if we have room to improve on our operating expenses. I would say yes. There are a lot of ways that management is looking at improving our OPEX. One is to run a very efficient balance sheet, because we know that the total balance sheet also brings in some kind of cost to the books. If you look at things like account charge, if you're able to run your balance sheet effectively, comparing what your earnings will be compared to having such large balances as a total assets, that helps you to see if you can. But that is very material to the operating expenses. We also look inward, as I said, in trying to not to continue to increase our staff costs. We're trying to recruit from inside. We have people with the experiences working in different departments where the need arises. We try to reassign people to ensure that we're not bringing in costs from the staff cost side. So it's a total package of what we're looking at. I would believe that with improvement, expected improvement also in power in the country, if that happens, we'll be able to also work down a lot of costs coming from that line of expense. So it's we're looking at all this. I would believe we have a lot of room to actually bring down our OPEX.
Mike, please.
Even though income is very critical to us, we believe liquidity is far more important than income. And so what we do as a bank is we try to ensure that we match liquidity and duration risk. And so when we are planning, we find that we have fairly consistent amount of money on the very short end of the curve, which is the T-bills, and some on the shorter end of the bond curve. And so if you check my duration, for example, on my asset side, it's around 1.5 years or thereabouts. And that's why it's consistent year on year, as you can see. And that will remain so, because liquidity is far more important to us than income. But interestingly, the yield on the bonds are even much higher than that of the T-bills. Because interest rate came down, T-bills was more reactive to that and came down much more than is happening on the bonds. So we're actually earning higher yield on the bonds than we are earning on the T-bills.
Yeah, I get that, Michael. That's the point I was trying to make, that obviously the reduction in the yield on the T-bills, you may want to shift more into bonds, but obviously you've just said that you would rather focus more on liquidity first than its specific mix between the two assets, the two sub-assets. So if I can quickly go back to the loan-to-deposit ratio, I mean, the particular number of 80 is not necessarily that relevant. The point I was trying to make is that the trend has been going up quite a bit. So is there any effort by the bank to try and maximize NIMs in addition to maybe the regulatory changes that's forcing the LTD ratio up?
Well, I think the key thing is, naturally, there will be efforts on our part, and that's even the objective. And if you look at our NIM, it's been very, very strong, even at 8.1%. That's definitely, to answer your question, I'll say yes.
Okay, very clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sophie Ojo from Carina Stone Partners. Please go ahead. Your line is now open. Hello, Sophie. Your line is now open. Sorry, the line from Sophie Ojo, your line is now open for Q&A. Okay, as we have no response, we'll move to the next question from Hayo Abel from Apel Invest. Please go ahead, your line is now open.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. Yeah, I have just two questions. It's regarding your guidance for full year 2016. I would like to confirm, based on your projection, between 5 to 10% loan growth rate, which sector are you looking at that would drive this loan growth? Because based on our own expectation projection, we expect that H1 will still remain very soft in terms of lending. We expect because the clarity is still very poor, and we expect that H2 will be the saving grace. So which sector are you looking at to achieve this loan growth? And secondly, in terms of your deposits, looking at based on what the current challenges in, we started in 2015, which has spilled to 2016, reduced consumer spending, and we expect that there will be lower savings. So how do you intend to achieve this high deposit growth as of 10% in 2016? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your question. I think I take on the first one on loan growth. The focus for us on loan growth remains the following. One, the service sector. Remember that we are a nation of 170 million and the service sector is still thriving, notwithstanding the challenges of the market at the moment. Two, there are also sectors, the real sectors that are receiving a lot of reforms and incentives from the central bank and government. So, and this cuts across the various manufacturing sectors in the economy. So as the opportunities there unfold, we intend to begin to focus on them aggressively. And we also expect that as the budget spending kicks in, it throws up a lot of opportunity for us to increase the amount of business that is available for us to do. The other one on the question on the reduced consumer spending and how it will impact on our deposit generation. One thing we like to say is that as we go into the retail space, we are beginning to see that with the emergence of digital and electronic channels, there is a lot more that we are able to do. We are able to bring in, part of the financial inclusion strategy. We are also able to attract a lot of deposits. So we believe that the cumulative effect of additional and economies of scale of more customers coming in will impact positively with respect to the loan growth from the retail drive we have. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for this.
Okay, sorry, I just wanted to add a little bit on the deposit side. You know, if government is going to spend about 6 trillion in 2016, I would believe very strongly that the budget will be approved very soon. So as that happens, the whole funds will go through the banking system, and based on our own strategy to stay close to those who work for government are going to go to do most of the transactions that government will do. We also believe that we'll be able to get a lot of deposits coming from most of those businesses. So that will help us to achieve the kind of target we set for 2016.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I will take the next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Craig Netherall from Avior. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Craig Netherall from Avior here in South Africa. Thanks very much for taking my questions and congratulations on the resilient results. A couple of questions from my side. Just on slide 22 of the presentation, you provide the NPL analysis by sector, and you also do the same thing in the audited financials on page 55. And I'm struggling to reconcile what you have there for oil and gas at 11.2%, whereas if you look at it in the audited financials, it's at about 3%. And likewise for general commerce, it's 35% in the presentation, whereas the audited financials, it's much lower than that. It's 17%. If perhaps you could just correct me there if I've got something wrong or point me in the right direction there. The second question is around impairments and write-offs. I noticed that write-offs were quite low given the tough environment that you guys are operating in. Is this an evidence of large restructurings that are happening or being moved into the NPL category? If you could just take me through that. And then finally, for aggressive loan growth, which appeared to occur in Q4, I noticed that there was a large increase in your exposure. This is on slide 21 of the presentation to the general commerce industry. Given, you know, the tightening of FX liquidity there, is that something that concerns you, or what kind of opportunities are you seeing here where loan growth is so aggressive in Q4? Thank you very much.
Stanley, we'll just take the slide 22.
Yeah.
Okay,
good. Yeah, the what you're seeing on oil and gas on slide 22, we had a particular customer in one of our subsidiaries that is into oil and gas, that the facility was classified. So it's a new classification that came from one of our subsidiaries. That's what has moved the percentage contribution of oil and gas to NPL to this level. You're very correct. I think on the other financials, we're amending it because that particular note had we didn't capture it initially, you know. So that's been amended. Then the other one on general commerce is a movement between others. You know, what we had in others, we had to break it up a bit. So most of it moved into general commerce. That's why you have that level of movement there.
Okay, thank you very much. I think just to add to that, on the issue of general commerce, having a large portion of the loan growth coming from there, you ask, are we worried when you talk about the FX challenge? I think it's important to appreciate the fact that during my introduction, I did talk about the low supply of foreign exchange. Yes, we are worried, but I'll say that the situation is being handled because we don't have the FX the way it was about a year and a half ago. But what we've tried to do is to ration as much as possible, but we are able to meet all our foreign obligations, which I'll say is actually very positive. So are we worried? Yes, we are worried. We believe is not something that will definitely lead to an adverse situation. And talking about the issue of, you say, low provisioning in a tough environment, the environment is quite tough. We appreciate that, especially looking at the oil and gas, which you mentioned. But we appreciate the fact, too, that our loan loss provision actually moved up, our ratio of our non-performing to performing loans from 1.9 to 2.2. It's not an issue of restructuring. I think it's more of an issue of the quality of what we actually have in our books. Most of our loans are to very large multinationals and corporates. So you will likely not find a situation where you will see a massive deterioration in the quality of our assets. Certainly not. And this is not just at this time. If you stretch our balance sheet for 20 years and above, it's the same trend. You are not likely to see any major deterioration in the quality of our assets. Maybe slightly because of the tough environment. Yes, we actually appreciate that, but it's not going to be something that you will see any massive drop.
sorry. And then just one more with regards to the loan growth to the manufacturing and agricultural sectors that the CBN and government have advised. Is there any concern about this, that there's going to be opportunities in the sector that the obligors will be able to service their loans, given that I've noticed NPLs rising in these sectors?
The intervention from the central bank, there are basically two factors. They are not even new customers. The central bank is providing longer tenor loans and loans at cheaper rates. So we are not even taking different type of risk. It's the same risk we've been taking with this same customers. They just identify the strategic nature of their sectors, like say food processing, agri. These are international names that they've done these things over the years. They've been in our books over the years. So they are not really new risks. They are risks that we are very, very familiar with.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Wally Okoroboya. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. Some of my questions have already been asked, so I'll just move on to... My first question is, what's your outlook for monetary policy over 2016, and where do you see interest rates as well? And my second question is regards to COT over 2016. So the central bank has come up with a new draft guide for bank charges. What's your take on it? Is it positive for Zenith Bank, or is it negative, or what's your view on the changes they've proposed in the draft guide? And thirdly, is just on your NPL, so I think maybe a bit more color on the oil and gas. I know you tried to say something recently about it, but what exactly is it? Is it upstream, downstream, or where exactly is that really coming from? As well as your general comments, so because of all the FX issues, I don't know if you're worried about, given the fact that you have increased more of your loan book towards general commerce over 2015, whether that would also drive higher impairments over 2016. And I think that will be all for now. Thank you. And then, okay, then also on Q4, there's a negative COT balance as well in Q4. What exactly happened there exactly? Why there's a negative balance in Q4 for COT? For COT.
Okay, I think our CFO actually addressed the issue of the COT.
Okay.
And he did mention that we had reversals due to the non-clarity in terms of the effective date, whether it's the 1st of January or 1st of April. So I think that should actually take care of that. I've also addressed the issue on the general commerce. Nigeria is a predominantly import-dependent economy. So, and I've said it that we are not overtly worried. We are meeting all our maturing obligations. I want Felix Egwin will talk to you about the monetary policy, how is the outlook, what he thinks on 2016, and also on the issue of provisioning for oil and gas. I think that will talk on that.
Thank you very much. I take on the issue on the provisioning for oil and gas. We have as the provision that we have recognized in the books relate to a downstream transaction that was carried out by one of the subsidiaries. It got nothing to do with the books of the parent, of the Nigerian business. It's a one-off and a one-time obligor experience, which we decided that it was prudent for us to make the impairment and move on. In terms of the other aspect of the oil and gas portfolio we have, everything remains quite efficient and performing, given the conservative nature with which we really book our risk assets. So we expect that will continue. We don't, on the other aspects of oil and gas, like I said, everything is in order. Thank you.
On the monetary policy outlook, I think one thing we should note is that CBN has made all this effort to try to retain some of the economic indicators, for instance, holding on to the single-digit inflation and all that. But recent events have shown that this has become extremely difficult. You can tell from the February inflation result that has moved to double digit at 11.4, it's becoming increasingly difficult to hold on to some of these policies. So market expectation at the next MPC would essentially show some increases in some of these indicators. We expect the MPR to go up, but how far up it will go, it will be difficult for us to tell at this moment. The boundaries around the limits set around each of that, we expect it to remain, while the main indicator may rise. But we are hopeful that CBA will continue to manage this and other indicators that may come up within the period as the events unfold.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of N. Debussy from OBK. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for the session. I have just two questions. My first question has to do with your agric loans. It seems the delinquency ratio there is quite high. Can you talk us through what's happening to that sector? Also, your real estate and construction, you also talk to us through that sector if you're optimistic about the outlook for 2016. Then my second question has to do with the collapse in your non-interest revenue line in Q4. So perhaps you can explain what aspects, but I noticed there was some form of FX trading loss recorded during that quarter. Maybe you should explain that loss, and also if you could extend your explanation to the outlook for non-interest revenue in 2016, with special emphasis on Q1 especially.
Okay, thank you very much. On the FX trading loss, Stanley will take time. Stanley, go ahead, please.
Okay, you'll be looking at net gains on FX revaluation. What has happened is that we have other lines of income that went into that line, which we moved out in the lines where they belong in the income line. That's what it's looking like. It's a movement, a downward movement in the last quarter. But if you compare year on year, that's 2014, you will see that it's reasonably about the same level. But the movement out of that line, if you're looking at top quarter and other, what caused that movement? So it's not like any law in any sense of it.
So on the issue of agri, right?
On the agri, it's a particular provision we have to make from one of our subsidiaries in Africa. One of our African customers had a particular customer who had a loan that we considered impaired, and we had to prudently make that provision, and that's why you see that. It's not, if you look at our agri, it's not something that we are very particular about to close here, yeah? And then that one is done with, and we've moved on with it.
How is the net non-interest revenue playing out so far in 2016?
Non-interest revenue. I think it's playing out well. I mean that initially at the beginning of the year there was apprehension about COT being phased out, and the industry were very happy to see account managers that coming in at some level of replacement, maybe not at the level we had played over the years on COT, but we believe that we are minimizing the impact by the phase out of the COT. We also believe that with increased transaction volume and traffic, we'll be able to push up our earnings on account metrics, and that will help to take care of that. So if you look at the way it's trending, I would tell you it's trending very well. We do not have any doubt of being able to continue to show strong, to have strong showings on non-interest income being going into this.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ula Worker from SBG. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Some of my questions have already been answered, but I have about three questions. My first question, in relation to dividend policy, I wanted to find out what management's view is in light of the difficult environment. Then with the FCY loans, there was how much of the 24% year-on-year growth happened with new loans in 2015, given that the currency declined about 8%? And with regards to unsecured loans, which was up about 78% year-on-year, I wanted to know how comfortable management is with the increase and what sectors these loans sit with. Thank you.
Can you take that third question again?
Okay, unsecured loans were up 78% year-on-year. So I wanted to know how comfortable management is with the increase and what sectors these loans sit in.
Okay, thank you very much for your questions. I'll start with the unsecured loan. They cut across different sectors, and largely we deal with the top corporate and institutional obligors, so that gives us a very high margin of comfort. These have been names that we deal with. It's always a case of dealing with the leaders and the major players in each of the sectors where we operate in. Margins may be low, but the comforting for us is that asset quality is very reasonably assured. In terms of the FCY loan growth, what we have in the last 1 year, there hasn't been any increase in the FCY loan growth for obvious reasons. Instead, what we have is a bit of a reduction arising from the repayments that we've experienced in the course of the year.
Okay. On the issue of the dividend policy, you talked about, I'm sure you are probably looking at the dividend payout. But if you look at what we have in terms of our total shareholders' funds, we believe that in terms of the payout ratio, it's been quite consistent. So really, consistency is the key as it is. But we have sufficient buffer if we are looking at risk in the environment itself. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ankit Mittal from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Hello.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I just wanted to know, like, the general provision requirement is increased to 2% of loans from 1%. So how it will affect the cost of risk?
1 to 2.
You asked whether it was increased from 1 to 2?
Yes.
Yes, it was increased. It was increased from 1 to 2%.
And like, how it will affect the loan loss provisions in 2016?
Okay, how that affects the loan loss provision? You know, the 2% increase is on Nigerian GAAP, but our account is based on IFRS. So if you have, what you do the impairment both on the Nigerian GAAP and the IFRS, and you compare both. Now, what you will notice because of the 2% general loan loss, you will see that the provisioning coming from NGAAP will naturally higher. So the difference you put in credit risk reserve, so you make that provision in credit, so that's where that goes. What the central bank has said again is to ensure that that keeps taking out current year earnings. So if you do that, what the second thing you can do, you don't have structuring to increase your ability to pay dividends, but you don't have some because you're not a lot very comfortable and you're able to pay the kind of dividend you want.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Michael Akimi from Standard Chartered. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Thank you for your presentation. My first question is on lending facilities. I realized that on lending facilities grew from like 80 billion to 287 billion. I just want to get a sense of the nature of these facilities, which sector and what kind of customers these facilities are advanced to. My second question is on the operating expenses. There's a line item for provision for claims. I just want to get a sense of what the nature of that expense is. It's about 9.7 billion. And my final question is on general commerce. I know a lot of people have asked questions relating to general commerce, but I just want to get a sense of what the cap is internally within Zenibank for your exposure to that industry. Is 20% too high? Are you looking at 30%, or what's the cap internally? Thank you.
Let me start from the provision for claims. Basically, that's a demonstration of our high level of prudence. We have about one or two customers that were claiming certain amounts from the bank, the back of some charges and all that. And so what we decided to do is to make a provision for that amount, believe we will resolve with the customers and possibly write back most of the income to the books. But, I mean, being prudent at this point, since it was on the table at the point of our closing of the year, we decided to make provision for it.
Then on the increase in the multilateral lending, I think what's driving that is on the back of the various initiative of the CBN, the on-lending activities of the CBN that is focused on agric and the micro, small, and medium enterprises sector. And we, of course, we also have our multilateral lending activities that also account for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Ronette Gardia from Exotics. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, and thank you very much for the presentation. Firstly, can we just start with your macro assumptions? We've seen the projection for 2016, but what macro assumptions are you making on that in terms of GDP growth, inflation, and exchange rate? And also if any regulatory changes that you're anticipating, especially with respect to FX. The second question, again, is more to do with your non-interest revenue. I think a lot of people have talked about COT, but would appreciate if you can just be a bit more specific in terms of how you expect your COT to evolve this year, given that it is being zero-rated, but the central bank has introduced other regulations which might offset that. And also some of the other non-interest revenue line items like trading revenue, and also revenue on letters of commission. The other thing is with respect to your asset quality. Can you just be a bit more specific if you have restructured any loans, especially in the oil and gas sector, and if you have, what restructuring assumptions you've used? If I remember correctly, I think in your first half conference call you mentioned that you are looking to restructure two loans at the time, and obviously the oil prices have declined quite significantly since then, so have you restructured a lot more than what you were initially expecting? And the last question is to do with your capital adequacy ratio. I've noticed that, you know, if I look at your risk-weighted assets to total assets ratio, it has declined quite a bit on a year-on-year basis, which is quite surprising given that, you know, your loan-to-deposit ratio has increased, and even your loan growth was pretty strong, and generally the credit environment is quite weak. So if anything, you know, the risk-weighted assets should, the weighting for that should increase and not decrease. If you could just comment on that. Thank you.
Okay, I think maybe just to clarify, issue of COT, there's nothing like COT in the Nigerian banking space again in 2016. What we have is the account maintenance charge, which is lower than COT.
Okay.
Based on our CFO's presentation, he was quite clear that non-interest income will be challenged. Even LC Commission, we expect to have challenges there because of the fact that even the foreign exchange is being rationed. So it goes to say that the volume of LCs opened previously might even drop. So we appreciate the fact that non-interest income will be challenged.
Okay.
What you did mention is that we will try to increase or increase our own market share in this particular space. But if you look at them on a line basis, we expect that we'll have challenges in terms of that. But if we try to gain market share, that might compensate because the account maintenance charge is still based on turnover. So if you improve your market share, that will actually help.
Okay. Michael, sorry, just before you move on, I mean, you mentioned rightly that you, banks may need to reduce their exposure to LCs given the FX challenges. But if I look at your 2015 numbers, it seems like your exposure to LCs actually increased and increased quite significantly as well. So can you just comment on that as well, please?
No. If you check, it did not increase. Recall that if you check where we have takings from other, what we have for our placement with other banks, if you look at the balance you have there, these are basically the LC money we have with foreign correspondent banks. It dropped by almost 50%.
So I think you were talking about the letters of credit.
Yes, I was actually trying to refer you to the balance that we have in terms of our placement with our correspondent bank, due from other banks. If you check slide 13, due from other banks dropped from 506 billion in 2014 to 272 billion. That's 46% drop.
Right.
Those are the deposits that we have on account of customers' foreign obligations, LCs mainly.
Okay.
So that just shows you and confirms that our volume of LC has dropped significantly. So we don't expect any major increase in that regard in 2016.
Okay. Sorry, Michael, sorry to interrupt, but if I look at your detailed financials, there's note 39, which is the off-balance sheet exposure. And on that, you know, the letters of credit have gone up from 216 to 232. How do we reconcile that with, you know, the exposures to or due from other banks?
No, you see, you know the point. You see, the point is at what if you check note 32. Note 32, you said.
39.
Okay, the financials. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I don't have that detail here. But our balance sheet is not just LCs alone. Are you looking at the line on LCs? Specific.
Yes. Well, when I'm looking at your, you know, confirmed credits and other obligations on behalf of customers.
Okay. We'll check that because really, what you should appreciate too, why you cannot look at the two completely. For one of them, the one I was referring you to that dropped by 46%.
Right.
These are the deposits that we've already committed. You understand?
Right.
LCs have been opened. The deposits are there. But we also have the contingent liability where money had not moved.
Right.
You understand? Money had not moved. So those ones, too, you will still have those ones off balance sheet. But don't expect any growth in terms of LCs now because the volume of LCs we are opening has actually dropped significantly. And all these ones we have, these figures, most of them are old LCs. They are not new LCs that we are opening, no.
Right.
And we expect that trend to probably continue.
Okay.
On the computation of capital adequacy, you mentioned something about our loans growing and then you're seeing that the risk-weighted assets is dropping. One particular aspect of it is what we call the risk mitigant. Aside the amount of loan you have to also consider what mitigants you can claim for each of the loans. We have situations where there are loans that have been granted where you have qualifying mitigants that you need to claim, so that reduces the amount that is then risk-weighted. So that is what is the likely cause of that kind of drop you're noticing.
Okay, on the issue of the asset quality, oil and gas restructuring and all that, I think I would just want us to want to explain our broad strategy in the oil and gas exposure upstream. Ebenezer will take that, and I know you mentioned that in the Q1 or the Q2, I would say we were restructuring two of our assets, two of the facilities. He will just give the details so that we'll cover everything on oil and gas, because there seems to be quite a lot of interest in the oil and gas. Not as if we have so much, though.
Okay.
Please, Ebenezer, can you take that?
Thank you very much, Peter. The first thing to say here is that in terms of our exposure in the upstream oil and gas sector, our focus is on we finance only brownfield assets. Most of them basically are the assets that were offloaded by the IOCs. Secondly, some of them we had hedges in place. So when we are talking about the restructuring, our focus was mainly on the
portion that didn't have the restructuring. And for obvious reason, given the way the price regime has been, it has not been easy for us to get the hedge in place. But in terms of the restructuring, yes, we've done, in terms of the total amount of loan restructured to our loan book is less than 4% on the whole. Then in terms of the portfolio size itself, that's specifically talking about oil and gas, we've restructured, let me say, obligor size is less than 10, total exposure. Then in terms of those restructure, obligor by number, we'll be talking of about 4. And the restructuring is actually to align the cash flow to ensure that our repayment is properly aligned with the cash flow. And we also introduced a sculpting arrangement such that should we have a rally in the price of crude, we'll be able to aggressively improve on the repayment. So that is what we've put in place. And the good thing about of this asset is that there is a reasonable increase in the amount of the production volume going on. So we expect that where we are now, we should be able to keep the portfolio as decent as we expected. So given that scenario, we are comfortable with where we are, that this particular portfolio will not deteriorate in terms of asset quality.
Okay. Good. That's very detailed. If you could just talk about the macro assumptions you're using.
Okay, on the macro side, I wanted to know our assumptions on GDP, inflation, FX, and interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
We think GDP has come off, it's obvious. GDP has dropped about 2.7% year on year for 2015. We don't think Nigeria will go into recession. That we don't think will happen. We think we'll bottom out, and we think things can only look up from where we are at the moment. And so in our planning and our projection, we think things will look up from where we are at the moment. Things were really, really bad in January, but we've gone around the corner, and as you can see, oil prices are moving back again, gradually. And so we feel on the GDP side, Nigeria can only do better from where we are at the moment. On interest rate, inflation seems to be an issue here. And so the question is, will you want to project growth as against inflation? That's the question I guess the MPC will answer on Monday and Tuesday when they meet. But we expect that over the year, interest rates will probably go up to support, to bring down inflation. And so we are projecting along such lines. Where it will be, nobody can tell. But we expect a bit of improvement in interest rate environment. Okay. On the FX side, the bank is doing a lot to see what they can do to ease the liquidity issue in the market. In the papers today, they mentioned the fact that they're meeting with some ministers to discuss how they can improve FX supply to the manufacturing sector. We think it can only improve from where we are at the moment, and we are all waiting to see what they put in place to ensure that liquidity increases in the FX side. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I will take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Sophie Ojo from Garina Stone Partners. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Hello. Yeah, so it's just one question. Most of my questions are being answered, and congrats on the resilient results. On slide 10, on slide 9, though, just a little guidance on your non-interest income. I noticed that there's a line item there, other income, which grew 51% year on year. Can you clarify clarify the components of that line, and generally what do you expect for 2015 in terms of non-interest income?
That's other income, right? That grew by 50%.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Well, the portion that is other income there, you know, what we've done is to separate the particular ones that we have named, like fees and commission, trading income. So what has come into other income will be every other income, like the ones coming from our transactions on the mobile banking, mobile income, and all that. So all of them will be there. So those ones that you cannot clearly define on the face of the balance sheet is what will come under other income. And we expect it to continue to grow as we gain traction in most of our mobile deployment and all that.
Okay. Thank you. Just also in terms of guidance on non-interest income, do you see income from all of these other transactions rising to compensate for the loss in COT?
Yes. I'd mentioned earlier that one, you will see that we've improved our credit-related fees, improved by 7% year on year. we have some bit of replacement for COD in account maintenance charge. We intend to push for greater volume and traffic, and as you do that, you'll be able to achieve some mileage on the growth. Aside that, we also want to also push for volume increase in other forms, because we believe non-interest income is a volume game. I mean, if you're doing much, you probably will earn more. So as we do more transactions, push for more transactions, go for more transactions, we believe we'll be able to achieve a very good mileage on non-interest income.
Okay, one final question, please. On AMCON charge, I noticed it grew almost 9% year on year, because of the expansion of your balance sheet. And this is just trying to get a sense, your view as a major stakeholder in the industry. During these times or these very hard times, do you think stakeholders would push AMCON to reduce this charge, or do you think this will just continue to go as we have seen as the balance sheet continues to rise?
Well, the issue around AMCON charge is an industry issue. There's a committee that has been set up to look at issues relating to AMCON charge. We have a representative from banks in that committee, and they will discuss as it will affect the industry, because mind you, the AMCON was also set up to help de-risk the industry. So we are very aware of the costs coming in the P&L for all the banks. But again, most times you have to sacrifice for the good of the industry as a whole. We may not say exactly if the rate is going to come down. We believe at the level where we are running, we probably will run at this level for a while. So if we grow our total assets, definitely it will show up in our expense from AMCON.
Okay, I think we will appreciate if the analysts too and investors can write more on this particular charge for it to be reduced or even waived.
Okay.
Thank you very much. So we'll expect to hear from
you. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sujesh Rumka from FENCAP. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, good evening, everyone. This is Sujesh Rumka from FENCAP. I just have three questions. The first one is still around general commerce. I think my question, let me structure it this way. So if you look at your 9 months presentation, general commerce was 9% of your loan book. Now it's 23%. So between 9 months and full year, it's gone up, you know, quite significantly. So can you speak to what exactly is driving that growth? And is it to any extent, you know, related to movement of certain LC balances on balance sheet? That's my first question. My second question is, when you spoke a little bit about on-lending facilities earlier on, but there are two things, you know, I observed there. So the first one was around, you know, excess crude loan facility, and second one around the salary bailout scheme. If you can just talk broadly around what exactly is going on there, the nature of risks, and how comfortable you are with your overall exposures over there. And my final question is around the draft guide to bank charges. Do you think it's net positive or negative for the sector overall? Thank you.
Okay, Saji, thank you very much. I think on the SS crude and the salary bailout, the important thing is these are first line charges. So before any state government will receive their allocation on a monthly basis, the ECA and the salary bailout, the banks will have been settled. So to that extent, how comfortable are we? And again, it depends on who you are dealing with. We are comfortable with those that we are dealing with. And the nature, the way it's been structured, that there are first line charges, that in itself is quite comforting. Talking about the issue of the general commerce, I don't think there's any one should be overtly too concerned in that particular area. General commerce, basically, we are talking more of buying, selling for different areas. It's not a particular industry that you can say, look, oh, this is like telecoms, or this is like those who are selling rice. You know what a shipload of rice is, for example. That's general commerce. In terms of the volume, it's even more. And what you should look at is, in terms of switch from one sector to the other, what drives it? What's the motivation? The key thing is that the obligor is important. The sector, too, is actually important. Nigeria is largely an import-dependent economy. And sometimes, too, general commerce, too, it could be less even risky than some of these sectors where you have to start. Because if you look at the chain from manufacturing, whatever you manufacture, you must sell. Those who are selling some of these manufactured items, some of them are even classified under general commerce. So we are not really worried about that. And if you look at our overall loan growth, that is not even something that you can say is so huge. It is not at all. You know. So, Stan, you want to give more details on that?
Yes. So, what we've also done is to go a bit granular. If you look at the 2014 orders, where you have orders, there are some clients have moved from that group to general commerce and went granular to begin to understand or to do more on the businesses they are doing. And some of them have moved from that class. So you see others also coming down from about 4% to 0.06%. So you will see that movement, not basically because there are some new laws that are created under general commerce, but some level of movement to this class. So it's, as the MD said, it's not of any concern as a part of risk to the bank.
Okay. Next question.
The last question, which is around the draft guide to bank charges.
Okay. What was the question on that?
My question was, what's your view on, you know, do you think it's net positive or negative for the sector? And just one additional question. On general commerce, I think maybe the issue is one of misunderstanding as to what exactly is general commerce. So maybe what you can help us clarify is, to what extent would general commerce be simply domestic trading as opposed to importation of products?
I think what we'll do, we'll pose that, it's not just domestic trading. We'll post that and give detail on that on our site, so that would clarify that aspect.
Guide to bank charges.
On the guide, it's still an exposure draft that we have, so I don't think we should be too bothered with that for now. It's an exposure draft, and they are still getting inputs at this particular stage. So I think it's still a bit early. We're trying to overtly discuss that for now. There are still people coming up with different suggestions. So until it is actually concretized and passed by the central bank, then I think we can start looking at that in detail. But for now, we are still looking at it. We are still making suggestions. And we will expect that it should be positive overall.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from the line of Abhav Bakoda from Schroders. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, yes. Just a couple of hopefully quick questions. I think it was asked before by Craig from Avior, but there is discrepancy between the presentation, slide 22, on the sectoral split of NPLs and the financial statements, page 55, which is note 3.2.9.1, which is, again, the NPL split by industry. For example, you know, on the presentation, you've got agriculture at 7.8% of NPLs, whereas if you calculate it based on the financial statements, you've got agriculture at 16.5% by my calculations. So just a quick, if you could clarify which one of those is right, the presentation, slide 22, or the financial statements, page 55, and how would you reconcile that? So that's question one. And then just question two, on slide 19, you can see that in terms of the loan splits, there's a big growth in both public and in institutional. So if you could just explain what's been driving those. I mean, the public, maybe that is to do with the intervention funds you mentioned earlier, but I would have thought, given the state bailout from state lending into FGN bonds, you'd have seen the public exposure go down. But perhaps you could explain better the public and institutional growth in gross loans. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. On the split on in NPL, I mentioned earlier, the slide is correct. I mean, the presentation slide is correct. We note that movement. You see the movement between agri and all of that. When I was making my mention that, so we're correcting that particular note on the financial, so that you will see.
Okay,
the final print.
Thank you.
So, Okay, good.
So on the growth of the public sector, I think you are very correct. It has to do with intervention. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, the customers that we have that we intervene on their behalf, it's because we are very comfortable with them in terms of most of the states that are challenged, there's no doubt about that. But these are actually, as I said, they are first line charges. Mm-hmm. And the states are the states that we've dealt with where we have their statutory account. So to that extent, we are quite comfortable with the ones that we have selected.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
Okay, and the institutional growth, so that's gone from 6.9% of loans to 12.8%. What's that about?
Institutional.
That's basically anyone that doesn't fall between corporate and
commercial,
and then the ones that are not public sector. That's what has gone into that.
Can you give an example of an entity that would be that?
Okay, what do you have? Some service-related industries or sectors?
Insurance, financials.
Yes, those ones will go under institutional.
Okay, fine.
That's basically the classification of that thing.
Okay, thank you.
Any other question?
As there appears to be no further questions, I'll return the conference to you.
Okay, thank you very much. I thank you very much for your questions and for your participation. I just want to round up by looking at our key growth target sectors, which I think we've even covered in the course of the presentation. In terms of identified growth sectors, if you look at the slide just before the last, you'll find that we've itemized which aspect do we expect that we'll have growth. Infrastructure, manufacturing, petrochemicals, agri. When we talk of agri, a lot has to do with food processing and the service industry. In terms of the progress for 2016, we expect that 2016, just like 2015, will be quite challenging. We've discussed extensively in terms of the non-interest revenue, LC commission, other commissions, COT, which is off. But we expect that one way to compensate is to up the game, gain more market share, improve on our retail, revenue from our retail, which are purely domestic. We look at our deposit base, how we can improve on our costs generally. The agri sector is another service, it's another area where we believe that we can also have a decent growth in our loans. Now, talking about customer service, that has always been at the center of our strategy. And we believe that if you serve your customer well, definitely you can improve your turnover in that particular area, which we did very well in 2015. When you look at our gross earnings, the growth we recorded in our gross earnings, we expect that we will do much more in this particular area so as to gain more market share. We hope to invest more in technology and product innovation, and also in terms of risk management to also improve. So I really want to thank you all for taking out the time to attend this presentation, and I wish you well, and we hope to see you at the end of our Q1. So thank you very much, and have a very good day. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.